people first organizations will win in the future of work.
Your only real asset is your people.
We all want purpose-driven work.
HR-led organization is...
I'm sorry, but leaders don't lead empty desks and empty shop floors.
Welcome to the People Strategy Leaders Show. I'm your host, Sri Chalapa, founder and president of Engagedly, and a serial entrepreneur in technology, films, and music. This is where we talk to people leaders, business strategists, and organizational savants about leading in the time of change. What is working, what is not working, and more importantly, what we should be thinking about. Stick around to the end of the show. We will reveal how you can be our next guest. And now, let's engage.
Hello and welcome to People Strategy Leaders Podcast. I am Sri Chalapa, your host. Today, I'm joined with Lisa Fain. Lisa Fain is the Center of Mentoring Excellence CEO, a global speaker and expert in the intersection of cultural competency and mentoring. Her passion for diversity and inclusion work fuels her strong conviction that leveraging differences creates a better workplace and drives better business results. Lisa is a certified mediator, graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Social Policy from Northwestern University and holds a JD from Northwestern University School of Law. Lisa lives in Seattle, where she loves to hike and explore the Pacific Northwest with her husband and two daughters. Lisa is the co-author of Bridging Difference for Better Mentoring and the 2022 revision third edition of The Mentor's Guide. Both are co-authored with the Center of Mentoring Excellence founder, Dr. Lewis Zachary. Well, welcome to the show, Lisa. Thanks for making time for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Sri. I'm delighted to be here.
Awesome. Well, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the current changes in diversity and inclusion with the administration's policies around that and the changes in policies a lot of organizations have taken into. And I recently read some article about, you know, Target coming under a lot of backlash around that. So we'll jump into the main topic in a second about mentoring and peer, but I wanted to understand what is, in your view, currently is diversity and inclusion practices on its way down and dying, or do you feel it's just a lull and we'll really be focusing on that going forward again?
You know, it's a great question, Sri, and I don't know, I don't have a crystal ball, but I'll tell you sort of what my general reaction is. Certainly the need for it has not changed. There are many organizations that are still committed to the goal of diversity and inclusion. I think it's important to remember that diversity and inclusion, or diversity, equity, and inclusion, is a means to an end. It's a means to creating a workplace that is more productive, there people can bring their whole selves and do their best work and all of that. So the need for it, and in many cases, the demand for the outcome, hasn't changed at all. It's the vehicle by which people are asking for that outcome that I think is changing. I am in the mentoring space, and the good news about mentoring is that there's lots of different things that generate mentoring, but we know that good mentoring practice is an inclusive leadership practice. So there's a lot of overlap there. Mm-hmm. I would say, to answer your question more directly, the initial demand for it certainly has decreased as we record this in the middle of April of 2025. You know, in the last 8 to 10, even 12 weeks, the demand for DEI-focused mentoring initiatives that come through our center has changed. But the desire of our clients and our prospective clients for that outcome hasn't changed at all. So it's really a very interesting time, and we'll have to just kind of wait and see what comes up.
It blames out. Yeah. I mean, we've obviously done a lot of work around that, and we also have a platform for, you know, creating mentoring programs, and some of this has been challenging lately with the change in policy and funding and things of this nature, because many of these organizations are funded by federal government or some state government in some cases. So they do feel the pressure to reorient themselves.
Yeah.
But coming back to focusing on the topic of mentoring, the topic that I actually, like to talk about, which we discussed previously, which is not something that is talked about a lot, Is really around, mentor-mentee relationship is always considered as mentor and mentee, right? Which is mentor being somebody who's more experienced and seasoned and has a lot more wisdom and can mentor somebody who's more junior. But another aspect of mentoring that has seen a lot of success, and there's a different use case for that, is peer mentoring. So can you, and you talk a lot about how that can also be a very effective method. Can you talk about what exactly qualifies as peer mentoring and why, and where does it really apply?
Yeah, great question. So let's just distinguish it from traditional one-on-one mentoring, which, as you say, is something hierarchical, where someone more senior mentors someone more junior. We hear a lot about what we call complementary mentoring, and others call reverse mentoring, which is where somebody more junior might mentor somebody more senior. So contrast that with peer mentoring, which is a developmental relationship like the other forms of mentoring, focused on learning, where everybody is both a teacher and a learner. And this can happen one-on-one. This can happen in groups as well. And there's lots of different forms that peer mentoring can take. But the general gist of it that all of those have in common is there's not a hierarchical difference. And we're showing up as everybody is a learner and a teacher.
So is peer mentoring basically saying that, hey, you have expertise in certain areas that I don't, and I have expertise in certain areas that you don't? So maybe if we mentor each other in some ways, that's effective.
Mostly.
Is that one way to look at it?
It sure is. I mean, there are some peer mentoring configurations where one of the peers is the mentor and one is the mentee. But the peer mentoring, as I like to refer to it, is exactly what you're talking about, Sri, where, look, we're not just showing up for lunch. We're not just showing up to have coffee with one another, although certainly we can eat and drink coffee if we like, but we're showing up for the purpose of learning. So it really is in the same way that you would in an effective one-on-one hierarchical mentoring relationship, or even a one-on-one complementary mentoring relationship. In peer mentoring, you also want to define what the learning goals are. You want to set the parameters of the relationship, but it's really important that you show up for one another.
So what are the benefits of doing a peer mentoring vis-a-vis the traditional mentoring of a senior versus somebody junior?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Certainly, there's the same benefits that you see in any organization that is focusing on learning and development, which include, of course, engagement and retention and the sense of accountability and satisfaction in the work environment when there's somebody who is there to show up for one another. But also this idea of kind of expanding your perspectives. Mentoring itself, being a mentor, expands the skill set of the mentor as much as it expands the skill set of the mentee. So imagine in a situation, what we're hearing more and more from organizations is, look, we have a dearth of mentors. We're considering a mentoring configuration, traditional mentoring configuration, but we have a dearth of mentors. And the same people are always volunteering, and when they're not able to dedicate the correct amount of time or the appropriate amount of time to mentoring, in a peer mentoring situation, people are showing up for their own development, and there's a sense of ownership and agency in co-creating the relationship that comes a little bit more naturally than it might in a hierarchical relationship.
So in peer mentoring, is it more function oriented in some cases compared to psychological aspects that?
It can be. It can be. I actually think that there's both the career and the psychosocial pieces of it. And also it can be job based. It can be career based. It can be kind of the more, some call them softer skills. I call them power skill based. But there's lots of different ways to do the matching or the pairing, right? I mean, it depends on what my learning is. So if we are in the same job function and my learning goal is to learn how to do our function better, then we'll want to pair within that function. So I have somebody to learn from. But I don't know if you've ever had a mentor who has not walked the path that you're looking to walk, and you get amazing perspective and amazing questions and curiosity that helps you kind of think about things a totally different way as well.
Okay, so can you talk about how do you as an organization, set up a peer mentoring framework inside the organization, or even, I guess, external to the organization, depending on how you set up the work? Like, what are some of the rules and process and approaches they should take into consideration?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the first question is, before you do anything, is why do you want to have this initiative in the first place, right? Because you want to design the initiative to meet what the desired outcomes are. So are you, is it an engagement and retention strategy? Is it a knowledge transfer situation? Is it to create a more inclusive work environment and, succession planning? There's lots of different ways to a lot of different potential goals. And then to think about the kind of configuration that will work best. So as we mentioned already, you could have one-on-one peer mentoring. You can have group peer mentoring groups. You could have kind of a mastermind configuration. And who is the population going to be, right? So how are you going to do it? Why are you going to do it? How are you going to do it? Who are you going to do it with? And then there's the importance of, I would say, kind of three other essential components, at least. One is how are you making sure that mentors and mentees, in other words, the participants in the peer mentoring, have the capability to be both a teacher and a learner. So what are you providing them in terms of resources for training, for capability building? That's really, really critical. Then how are you going to measure success?
Mm-hmm.
And that requires tracking. That requires communication with your cohort participants. And as with any change management initiative, with leadership, managers, executives, talking the talk about why and how this is important, and how are they going to reinforce and encourage participation in this important initiative, which means making time for it, not scheduling over it, asking people how it's going, weighing in on goals as appropriate, things like that. And then ongoing support. So what resources can you provide, whether internal or external, to provide ongoing support, whether that's coaching the mentors and the mentees on how to improve communication, whether it's providing access to resources that they might need for various goals or for mentoring capability, whether it's gatherings of the mentoring cohort, the peer, like one of the things that I think is so exciting about a peer mentoring configuration is this idea of having sharing among the cohort, where you, although you may have a formal mentoring relationship with one other person or a small group of other people, knowing who else is participating and understanding this process and being able to learn externally from that matched configuration is really exciting and generative.
So in your experience, when you set up these programs or help other organizations set up these programs, what were some of their objectives and why they were doing that?
Mm-hmm. A lot of the reasons we talked about, engagement and retention. One of the big ones now, Sri, is how do you unite and create culture in a hybrid work environment?
Right, right. I was thinking about that, right? How do you keep the culture?
Yes, connectivity is really, really important. You know, we're seeing, and there's been a lot of research and writing and talk about this epidemic of loneliness and from a mental health perspective. So there's a wellness component that organizations are looking at when they look at this as well. So there's lots of different things that they are trying to achieve. And sometimes it's all of those things. But you want to look at kind of leading indicators and lagging indicators as you're tracking, right? Because if what you're looking for are changes in employee engagement numbers or retention or attraction numbers and things like that, that's going to take a little bit to see the impact of mentoring on that. So you want to be measuring at the level of the mentoring configuration, whether it's a pair or a group, what are the goals that they're setting, and what are the outcomes that they are getting at that level, and what's their satisfaction as well. Then you want to be looking at the programmatic level. What is the level of support, satisfaction, and outcomes you're seeing at the programmatic level, whether it's participation, whether it's tracking? There's lots of different things to be looking at. Then also, of course, you want to be looking and seeing what is happening at the organizational level. And again, that sometimes takes a little bit of time to see those results.
In an organization, who typically owns this process? Is it run by HR? Is it run by somebody else who's not, I guess, quote unquote HR? Like, what have you seen typically in organizations, and what has worked in your view better?
Well, anything can work as long as there's real support for it. Most often it comes from somewhere within the HR function, talent development, the learning team. Sometimes it comes from the DEI function, although, as I mentioned before, that's happening less now than it was. Sometimes it comes from a lot from leaders within a particular vertical. We have had clients that have, whether it's the engineering function or the manufacturing function or what have you, that's looking to do that. And then usually it'll come from the whatever the top executive or the leadership team within that vertical is within a larger organization, but most often from the HR function.
HR function, yeah. So one question I have, when we've seen mentoring programs work, there are two different ways it work, especially the hierarchical approaches of traditional mentoring-mentee relationship, where you have a mentoring program where people get enrolled into, and it typically has very programmatic approach to it, where you meet every month on a cadence, and it lasts like a year, 13 months, 11 months, depending on the program. Or you have where you match the mentor and the mentee, and then you let them be. Do they run their own course of things, right? It's so they might meet every week, they might meet once a month, or they might meet twice and then they decide it's not working out, or one of them checks out and it doesn't, may or may not work out. Do you, first of all, the question is, are you still seeing that overall in general? There's two different, is there one being favored over the other? Second question is, a follow-up is, what are you seeing as effective in the peer mentoring aspect?
I'm not sure that peer mentoring in the peer mentoring context is any different than the hierarchical traditional context. So let me answer that question, and then I'll see if it leads to more curiosity on your part. That second approach that you talked about, pair people and then leave them on their own, is something that I affectionately call pair and pray, which is, you pair people and you just pray that it succeeds. And unfortunately, it's very hard I would say it's more likely that that will not be successful for kind of obvious reasons. You haven't had any level setting about what's necessary for a successful mentoring relationship. You haven't had any capability building. You have no tracking, and you have no mechanism for ongoing su support. I've just anecdotally, we will do work often with organizations who are looking to provide support for their mentoring cohort, and we'll do coaching of the mentoring pair. Like, we have a coach on our team who will talk to the mentor and the mentee. And there's been many, many, many times when early on in the relationship, either the mentor or the mentee will be on the phone with one of them, and they'll say, "This isn't working. The mojo isn't there in the relationship, and we're just not vibing, and I don't think it's going to work. And my mentor doesn't get me, my mentee isn't motivated," whatever it is. And through coaching, we're able to have them steer the relationship to get back on track and be very, very successful. There's a capability building piece of that that I find very exciting, which is that you're building the ca capability of your mentors and your mentees to repair their own relationships and have more successful communication. That's a ripple effect beyond just the mentoring program. With pair and pray, you'll never have that because you don't have a place for them to go. So that's just one downside of the pair and pray approach. Look, the upside of the pair and pray approach is that it doesn't really require a lot of human capital to manage that or to track it. And I understand that organizations don't have that. What they often find if they don't dedicate a resource whether it's an internal or an external resource to managing the mentoring program, is that you have that fizzle. And then later on, when you're trying to establish a mentoring culture or a learning culture, people say, well, look, I tried to participate in this mentoring program. It didn't really work. So I'm not really willing to invest the time again. So there's lots of different levels of support, and as long as there is some degree of support and structure and accountability, the level will depend on context of the organization, on comfort with technology, on internal resources for monitoring, on a willingness to provide data and feedback. There's culture, the overall culture of the organization, all of that will vary. The first approach that you mentioned, which is some level of tracking, capability building, and internal or external support, is what will help set the organization up for success.
Because I've seen that too, because when you do pay and pray, then you're expecting both of them to be highly motivated to make this work, and that's typically not always true. In fact, it's majority of the cases it's not true.
Yeah,
Because
and motivation is
something
only
comes
one piece of
out
it,
of, pardon
right?
me?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Motivation is really only one piece of it, because they may be motivated, but the unfortunate thing about developmental relationships in the workplace is that they are always important and very rarely urgent. And there's a lot of other urgent stuff on people's plates.
Exactly. A client call
So
comes up, or your boss wants you in a certain meeting, or you need to travel for work and you forget to reschedule it, and you don't meet for a month completely, then you skip 2 months in the process, and then you forgot where you left off. There are so many challenges where urgent
exactly.
supersedes the important.
Exactly. And so to get that reminder, or to know that there's somebody who's counting on you for that, or to get a little tickler notification that, hey, have you met with your mentoring partner, or how's it going, or we'd love to do an update on how all of that, people say, well, thanks so much for the reminder. Yeah, I do want to focus on this.
Now, I'll give you an example of a mentoring group that I'm part of. It's a peer
Please.
mentors of different CEOs. So we are peers, although some companies are, much bigger than mine, and I am bigger than some of the other companies. So it's like all over the map. Some of them are 2-3x the size, but nobody's an IBM in there. Okay, so these are all like relatively in the same size range. And the way I think it works really well, because we're all CEOs and we all have extremely busy schedules, and there's always an excuse of why I can't attend this meeting, is we have a moderator who keeps everybody accountable to show up. And this person sends pre-work and there's post-work. So if you don't, and you get called out if you don't do it, and then you're held accountable because everybody's time is important. We are talking about 5 or 6 CEOs of mid-sized companies. These are not early stage startups, these are mid-sized companies. So their time is extremely valuable. So you come in there and you're expected to contribute and prepare for the meeting. And that's one way to make this, some of these peer mentoring groups can be successful. Maybe even do these multi-group, like a peer group instead of one-to-one as well. Have you seen that work?
Yeah, absolutely. And this model of an outside moderator is a great one. I'll give you an example of one that I'm a part of personally as well, similar but yet some differences. And I'm giving you this example because although organizations can make space for this formally, but also create the capacity for people to do this informally. So, for example, I am also a small business owner, a solo practitioner, and we're going on year 4 now of a group of 5 other female entrepreneurs with similarly situated businesses. We call it our mastermind, and we meet every month and we self-facilitate. So, but there is a structure. First of all, we set up rules at the beginning about what the expectations were for people in the group in terms of attendance, in terms of commitment, in terms of what their, non-competition and all of those confidentiality, all of those things. And we'll rotate facilitators. So next week, there's a woman in the group who is in charge just for the month of April, sends out the agenda, puts the time limits on, makes sure people can attend and remember. And then we always have our follow-up, time for catch-up, time for setting the meeting, what have you. And we rotate that month by month. There's no external facilitator, but there is accountability to somebody who is setting the rules of the road for that particular meeting. So lots of different models for that. Another model is a topical model of peer mentoring. So sometimes organizations will say, we want to do a cohort of, let's call it new hires, just by way of example, right? We'll do groups of, eight, six to eight. And before we do this, we're going to survey the population and find out what the most salient topics are that they're interested in. And in the month of January, it'll be topic A. And in the month of February, topic B, C. So forth, people will come with their questions. Maybe there's an outside speaker, maybe there's an article we'll send them, but they'll set what their learning goal is. They'll hold each other accountable to what their takeaways and commitments are in between each meeting, and it is more topic based and focused. Lots of different ways to do that.
Yeah. So that's more, is it still a group or is it one-on-one at that point for
Could
mentoring?
be either. It could be either, usually a group in that
A
scenario.
group. Yeah. Yeah. I think a group has a much to, feels like I have a better chance of succeeding. And then they can still peel off and say, hey, you know what? You and I have certain topics that are more common than other people. Maybe we can peel off and have that separate sidebar peer mentoring discussion potentially. And I'm just hearing out. Possibly, because I've seen that work a lot as well.
For sure. I mean, and look, it's all in the context of a developmental network, which is really this constellation of relationships in the working context. Organizations set the stage for it. Individuals take accountability for forming it. So I might take advantage of my organization's one-on-one traditional hierarchical mentoring structure, but I might form my own peer group. And within that peer group, I might end up with an accountability buddy. Who is working on something similar to what I am. And then I might find a mentor externally who can help me with something that I'm working on in my volunteer life or another challenge. Or and then I might hire a coach. There's like all different spokes,
Yes.
right, of the
Yes.
relationship that set up this constellation of developmental relationships that give people agency and excitement and enthusiasm over their own development and really begins to have a ripple effect on their entire ecosystem.
Yeah. So final question on the peer mentoring. What are some of the advice you would give an organization not to do when they're launching a peer mentoring program?
Yeah, well, don't pair and pray. Right? Don't forget to measure and but first of all, don't forget to communicate with the people in your program. Find out what's working, find out what's not working. Make sure that they know that you're there for support. Send them resources, send them reminders, and then measure success. It can be objective measures, it can be subjective measures, it can be short video testimonials, that kind of measurement will help breed ongoing success.
Okay, I lied. I have one more final question. So
Please.
the final question is, do you believe that every organization should have it, or is there a specific use case saying if you see this, then you should have it?
It's a great question. Let me answer it a little more obtusely, and then we'll get there, which is I believe that all organizations should have a learning culture. And a learning culture is a culture that encourages people to learn, to invest in their own learning, and to invest in the learning of other people within the organization. So that can take many different forms. I think that peer mentoring can benefit any organization, but not every organization has the capability and the resources to set up formal peer mentoring structures. But every organization has the capability and the resources to encourage a learning culture, which then breeds itself into a mentoring culture. So I hope that answers your question.
So if I were to summarize here, you're saying if you have the capacity to have peer mentoring in your organization and the bandwidth, then you should have it.
Yeah, I absolutely. And I do believe that every organization should set an expectation that mentoring is part of their leadership competencies. That in order to be a good leader in this organization, in order to be an adequate and a satisfactory and an excellent leader in this organization, you have to have the capability to mentor other people. And we're going to provide you the resources to learn what that looks like.
That's a great point. That's an excellent point. I never thought of it that way, but it makes absolute sense. Excellent. Well, thank you, Lisa. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. The last question, I guess, is, how can people reach out to you and a little bit more about, your overall work and where does one find you?
Yeah, the best place to learn about us, our work, and to get into contact with me is through our website, which is centerformentoring.com. Center is spelled the American way, CENTER, and the word for spelled out. So CENTERFOR, mentoring.com.
Thank you, Lisa. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Sri Chalapa here. Thank you so much for listening to the People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you are a successful leader or a people strategist who would like to be on this program, please visit engagedly.com/People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media? If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag People Strategy Leaders. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Sri Chalapa. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. And thank you to Patrick Ramsey, sound engineer at Kalinga Production Studios, for recording and mixing this show.